You are listening to The Grandest Tour by The Cycling Podcast, brought to you by iWocker. Flexible loans built for small businesses. iwoca.co.uk.
Today, we are at the Giro d'Italia.
Cozze, cittadine, cozze, cozze, piscine, non spiegateci ora, non spiegateci ora.
Where are we, Daniele Fribrancini?
Well, Riccardo Moresotto, I'm going to ask you today, where are we? In which region of Italy are we, Richard?
Puglia.
Very well.
My first time.
Which region did we start in today?
Calabria.
No, Basilicata.
Ah!
But you're faring better than...
Close to Calabria. I mean, it must have been...
Well, yeah, it's the south of Italy. I mean, we'd been in Calabria a few
days
earlier.
Or should you just ask what country we're in?
Yes. Well, you fared better on Italian geography than lucky Larry Warbass for reasons will be revealed in a forthcoming
episode. It sounded like it was a good sport. I overheard that conversation.
Kilometer zero.
Yeah. We started today in Matera, where we finished yesterday. And it's worth dwelling a bit longer on Matera.
Well, it's worth dwelling purely for the purposes of corrections.
Corrections corner.
So this word that I blithely used last night, troglodyte. Troglodyte.
As you said this, I knew it was wrong, and I went back to my room and I looked it up, and it's a cave dweller.
The stone.
Such is my confidence in your knowledge of all things Italian. I didn't feel qualified to challenge it.
No, I got that very wrong. And so this was in reference to the kind of stone.
There are people on the internet, Daniel, who are lurking, waiting to correct you.
We've got some very loyal and well-informed listeners. And the stone, the word I should have used was, an Italian word, tufo, is the kind of... is the kind of stone in the sassi, the rocks or the stones of Matera, where we were staying last night. Tufo sfardato, more particularly. And, what a location it was, Rich, for the start of today's stage. I was speaking to Bernie Eisel, who I think is working for, he is working for Eurosport here. And he said that he came to Matera twice as a rider and really didn't notice that it was a particularly beautiful place. And he was just open-mouthed at how extraordinary it was, as we all were.
We all were.
I think all those of us who spent any time in the city over the last, between last night and this morning, unfortunately for the teams, a lot of them were staying out of town and didn't see much of the sassi.
It was a shame. Sage finished there yesterday and started there today, but the teams had at least an hour, some of them, to their hotels there and back. So, yeah, they didn't see the best of Matera, or indeed really much of Matera at all.
Speaking of geography, an opportunity for me to make more mistakes. We finished in Brindisi this afternoon in Puglia, a big port in Puglia. So Brindisi, Rich, in Italian, you talk about... Brindisi, when you toast someone, fare un brindisi. So I assumed there was a link that the two things would derive from the same root, the name of the place and this act of making a toast. Apparently not. Brindisi, the name of the place, refers to the shape of the port, and this is a word, there's a toponym whose origins are Albanian. Or it's kind of ancient Albanian, and it derives from the word for a deer's head. And apparently, I haven't looked closely at the map. I was about to do that actually before we recorded, because apparently the port of Brindisi resembles a deer's head. Brindisi, the toast, it comes from Spanish brindis, and this apparently came from German mercenary soldiers in about the 16th century in Spain, I think, and they used to talk about, when they wanted a drink or when they were giving someone a drink, they said, "Ich bringe es dir," I bring it to you. And somehow this morphed into Brindis and Brindisi. So identical words, toast in Italian, Brindisi, and the place Brindisi, but not at all related.
There we go. I mean, I think you've almost atoned for your troglodyte error.
Until we get a flood of corrections.
I thoroughly enjoyed living like a troglodyte last night in our cave hotel in Matera. And it helped that the sun was shining, didn't it, I think, as well. Today, when we woke up, the weather's not been great. It was chilly, but the sun was shining and it showed off that, you know, white stone at its best. It was sparkling, really shiny and sparkling.
If I can drop a massive name, I had a casual, apropos
oily,
nothing,
oily chat
today with the none other than the chairman or the director of the Italian Tourist Board. And then we were talking about Matera and Puglia and how important these places, particularly in the south, are going to be in what the Giro is calling the ripartenza of Italy, so the restart for Italy after the coronavirus pandemic hopefully passes. But you know, we talked about it, didn't we, a lot today, Rich, how much, what you can see, it's very obvious how much money is sort of flooded into Matera as a result of the place's natural beauty. And it was well, flagrant. It was very, very obvious, wasn't it?
You said it was almost destroyed. I mean, because in a certain light, it looks like ruins. There's a sort of very fine line between ancient ruins and absolutely beautiful, beautifully maintained structures, and only just in some cases.
And now it's absolutely peppered with flash boutique hotels, yeah. Very reasonably priced boutique hotels.
Absolutely.
That we'd recommend to anyone wanting to
go there. It's just interesting there that you, you drop the names Bernie Eisel, Larry Warbass, but you think that our listeners are going to be more impressed by the president of the Italian Tourist Board. That's an interesting.
The head honcho, the grande formaggio.
I mean, I'm not that impressed by that. One final note on Matera: Herbie Sykes, who lives in Italy, doesn't he? Knows a lot about Italy. Recommended a book, Carlo Levi, Christ Stopped at Eboli. He said, if you want to understand Matera, read that book. I've added it to my reading list. Well, the stage was stage 7 from Matera to Brindisi, 143 kilometres, a short stage.
Brindisi.
I think I said more or less that.
The emphasis is very important in Italian.
Brindisi.
You can't say Brindisi.
Brindisi. It's not as bad as Joe Dombrowski's pronunciation of Matera.
Gosh.
We'll hear that another time. A short stage, but crosswinds were expected, and crosswinds were duly delivered. We'll hear from James Knox, our diarist, a bit later on, but he talks about being on the De Quinn and Quickstep bus and feeling very nervous because they knew what they had to do today. And lo and behold, De Quinn and Quickstep and Jumbo Visma, the Dutch team, both kind of specialists in these conditions, went to the front and really attacked. There was a four-man break already away, almost with 2 minutes. Thomas De Gendt was there again. Fraporti was there. Pello was there.
You mean Androni Giocattoli, Simon Pio?
I do.
Guess who I spoke to this morning? GS, La Penna Bianca, another Gianni Savio.
Ah, no, the Modulo. Modulo, just a moment. Yes, Modulo is 4-3-1. So, for the riders to enter in the breakaway. 3, the climber that today they must away the hills. And 1 is Jonathan Restrepo.
The bomber.
Yes, the bomber. So I hope that he will make a good results in the sprint.
The bomber today is a Colombian, like Faustino Asprilla.
Yes, Faustino Asprilla. I remember that I meet Faustino Asprilla in one airport. I think London, because he was returned back in Colombia from Parma, and he was a very good player of Parma. Yes.
Fantastic Asprilla anecdote. Whoa. There from Jenny Sattler.
Yeah, real showstopper of an anecdote.
Fantastic. Well, the break didn't last long once those teams began sort of, sniffing the wind and going to the front. And as I say, it was a proper full-on attack. And the bunch was blown into smithereens. Jakob Fuglsang had been interviewed at the start and said, you know, wind was expected and they'd all be on their guard and prepared. And It's not quite as simple as that. You'd think that everybody would be just sort of hanging around the quick step guys, but it's not as simple as that. And Jakob Fuglsang was one of the riders left behind in a little group just off the back. Pao Bilbao, Rafał Majka, Domenico Pozzovivo, Harm van Hook, who's riding high. They were all left behind as well. Simon Yates was almost taken up by his Italian teammate Eduardo Affini. Fantastic effort by him. They almost got there and then didn't. And if you don't quite make it, that's it. Game over. So he didn't quite make it up there. And for a while, there were sort of three groups on the road. We actually went underneath a bridge that the riders were coming over, and we had a great view of the two leading groups at one point, Daniel, about 30, 40 kilometres into the stage. And it didn't ever look like really opening up. It wasn't quite like the Vuelta last year, the stage to Toledo, wasn't it? Where was it, Toledo?
The stage to Toledo, yeah. Guadalajara.
Guadalajara. The stage to Guadalajara, the Vuelta last year, when without being unkind to the Dicone Quickstep team that's here, there were just a few other big engines in that group last year. Philippe Gilbert, Zdenek Stibar, Tim de Klerk, they were all there. Maybe that made the difference. The big winners potentially were Vincenzo Nibali and Stephen Kruiswijk, but it all came back together. Either the wind wasn't strong enough, or perhaps the composition wasn't right in that front group. But Lotto Soudal and Astana did quite a lot to bring it back together, and it did come back together.
Well, Rich, Kruiswijk and Jumbo-Visma signalled their intentions today, didn't they? We were wondering at the start this morning who had the firepower to split it. Obviously, there are certain teams that are almost synonymous with crosswinds, De Koenig, Quickstep, Jumbo-Visma, in certain circumstances. But, neither team really has their A team, A squad here, do they? And we wondered whether they did have, those kind of those combine harvester types who can split it on a day like today. And Jumbo-Visma did try and did succeed for a while. And I spoke this afternoon after the finish to Stephen Kruiswijk about exactly how that had happened. And we'll also hear from Adi Engels, the team's direct sportif, about the planning that went into their move today.
So Adi, we all saw the race split early today, and Stephen Kruiswijk said that you guys were very much instrumental in doing that. Was that the plan this morning, or did you react to circumstances?
No, that was the plan to do it. I think everybody knew there would be wind and crosswinds, so the element of surprise is already really difficult to achieve. So I thought, of course, also talking with the guys, that it would be good to start early to have still a surprising effect. And I think also looking to the course, that was also the best part to split it. And I think we had still a lot of crosswind afterwards, but there was always some cover with, like, on a big highway, some trees, stuff like that. That was actually the two reasons to start early. Also with, pretty short stage. So if we were able to make the split and to continue, then it would be, of course, still almost 140 to go, but that's something else than another 200 to go. So we had the plan to go full guys there and see what happened.
Bit disappointed that some other teams or other riders didn't commit more, thereby helping you to maintain that split?
No. We have to go. No, not disappointed at all. I understand how it works. And I think we needed just one or two GC guys more in front, that there would be a little bit less cohesion in the back. But that's racing. We tried and it didn't succeed. But I'm happy that we got through in a good way, and because these are very dangerous days.
So, Stephen, we are used to seeing GC guys up at the front in the last 3 kilometres. You were right up at the front with 1.5 to go. Why was that?
Yeah, you have to ask Tony and Jos. No, they... I've got such strong guys in the team, and it's always better to sit in the front. Even there's a 3K rule, you still don't want to crash, and there's a lot of bouncing and fighting around. So you can choose to sit a little bit back or really in front. And I've got two guys who have the power to sit really in the front, kind of doing a sprint lead out. And So that's quite easy for me. I go in pole position into the last K and I can pedal to the finish and without doing any big efforts.
And you were one of the GC guys who weren't caught out, I don't think, by the echelons early in the stage. Just talk to me about when the split happened and where you were and what happened.
We knew we already planned to do something at the 6K mark because the wind was pretty from behind and it turned into crosswind. So there we took initiative and I think we were about five guys from us and a few other teams and we started pulling and then the bunch split and after a while we looked back and think of a few drop riders, but then it was also a few sprinters in the group who didn't want to work with us, of course, and the others came back and then it's then we saw also that's not for today to really make a split again.
And then in the finale it was a headwind, so no possibility to split it again.
No, then you have to pick your battles also, you know, it's come and save and don't risk it all. And maybe you could have tried it one more time, but yeah, still, I'd rather go in then save into the finish than maybe take 10 seconds. If it would have happened in the beginning, what it looked like a little bit, then it could have been a really nice day for us. But I saw also the GC riders coming back, but for sure everybody has suffered a lot.
Just last thing, Stephen, how are the legs? Marks out of 10, 7 out of 10 legs, 6 out of 10 legs at the moment, how are they?
Now they are 7, 8. Hopefully I will feel better when it really counts, you know. These days you have to finish safe and coming well and save energy as much as you can.
So that was Addy Engels and then Stephen Kruiswijk. I think the last couple of days, Kruiswijk, the way he's been riding, and he was up at the front again at the end there behind Jos van Emden, I think he's getting better and he's a real threat.
7 to 8 out of 10 he gave his
legs.
That's
pretty good,
isn't it? That's
punchy.
What would you give yourself at the moment?
My legs?
Yeah, well, just generally, just how you're feeling about yourself.
Six and a half.
6.5.
Yeah,
okay.
6.5. Anyway, it all came back together, unfortunately. Or fortunately, because Daniel, you revealed in the car that you don't like crosswinds. You find them
sad.
No,
I find them very sad. I find them full of pathos. I find them slightly tragic because it's always the guys who...
It's the good guys.
Well, the kind of good guys who are haunted by misfortune.
Picking dandelions at the back
of
the bunch.
Well, who were sort of, you know, who have had
whimsically flaneuring about the back of the bunch.
Who have had, you know, long careers haunted by misfortune.
Difficult childhoods.
Yeah, they're always the guys who lose out. And it always just, it invariably or almost invariably when they work, when the teams that initiate them get what they came for, it invariably cuts two or three guys out of the general classification battle, and they're usually, as you say, they're the affable, sympathetic characters that I like to see at the front. So I don't like crosswinds.
It's a fight to be in the front, isn't it? So
yeah.
it suits the guys who are physical, who are asserting themselves. The ones who are going, no, after you.
Yeah, the sort of genteel Renaissance men at the back. They always
lose out. Oh dear. Although having said that, Pots of Evil, rapidly emerging as our hero of this Giro, he would missed out, but he was throwing his not considerable weight around at the finish again. He was shouting at somebody else today. I noticed
the Rottweiler
of Italian cycling. It did all come back together, and it was a bunch sprint. It was a fast stage today. It set a new record for the Giro, 51.2 kilometres an hour. Quite a big beating of the previous record. And, you know, we're seeing this, and it did remind me of the Vuelta. Okay, it came back together today, but these sort of stages are just ridden flat out, you know, and there were crashes today as well. There was a nasty crash at 45 kilometres to go, and it was caused by the gantry that they have every 5 kilometres from 50 kilometres to go, which reduces the width of the road. And today they were on a sort of dual carriageway with barriers going up either side. There was a lot of pressure to be at the front as they went through 45 km to go, that this caused a crash, you know, and that's unfortunate. And quite a few riders quite badly injured in that. One or two of them may even be out the race. Tony Gallopin was in a crash, he's broken a bone. We think Affini might be out as well.
Damien Howson was struggling as well. We'll hear a bit more about that later.
We will. So in the end, Bon Sprint and Arnaud Démare, his third stage win, his second stage win in a row. Great work again by his rugby team. Miles Scottson, who crashed earlier on, took a bit of a flyer through the kilometre. He's been doing that. He's very quick at that sort of distance. And set him up beautifully. Jacopo Guarnieri was his lead out man again, a very good job. And then Démare, still quite a lot to do, but he drifted across the road quite effectively, not illegally, I don't think. Sagan was behind him. He just made it harder for Sagan to come round. I don't think it was dangerous. And Sagan never looked like being able to come round, so he was second, and Démare's third stage.
We heard earlier from Stephen Kreiswijk about how or why he was so close to the front with a kilometre to go. But Rich, what do you think that says about the other lead-out trains, that Jumbo, Visma and Kreiswijk were still able to hold the front positions in the group with a kilometre, 1.1 kilometres to go? I mean, is that unusual? Is that something that if you were a direct sportive or another team with a big sprinter, maybe Cofidis with Viviani, would you be slightly perturbed seeing
Perhaps.
That?
It was a headwind, though, so I think it's one of those finishes where everybody's holding back, and If you take it on too early in a headwind, then you can end up looking a bit silly. UAE were there in numbers, but not trying to sort of get involved, but not really in any kind of cohesive way. Caviria's been a bit of a surprise because he was looking quite good when racing resumed. He was only 11th today. Sagan, as I say, was second. Michael Matthews third. Ben Swift was fourth. They're not really pure sprinters,
and
are they?
There was a huge gap between Sagan and Démare and
Rudy Barbier, Davide Ballerini, Alvaro Hodge was the next sprinter in fifth. Probably a bit disappointing for him, but another great win by Arnaud Démare, who is in rip roaring form. One other bit of news from the cycling world today, and we woke up to the news that Paris-Roubaix is off. We kind of expected that. The situation in northern France and around Lille especially is pretty bad with regards to COVID-19. So the higher powers have made a decision that Paris-Roubaix is off. And the sad thing about that in particular is that it was going to be the first women's Paris-Roubaix. So that will not happen now. But we hope that Paris-Roubaix will happen, obviously, in April 2021.
You are listening to The Grandest Tour by The Cycling Podcast. Brought to you by iWalker. Flexible loans built for small businesses. Join 50,000 customers taking on life's twists and turns and scaling new heights with iWalker. If you run a business, find out more at iWalker.co.uk. iWOCA.co.uk.
Thank you very much to iWalka, our title sponsor. They also sponsor the Kendal Cycle Club. They're big supporters of cycling. And we heard from Ben Granger, a young member of Kendal Cycle Club, on the podcast the other day. I got an email from Rory Black from the club who said that Ben went on quite a few rides with James Knox of Tacuna Quickstep over the lockdown period when there was no racing and James was back home. They did some big rides in Lakeland. He also says that Ben will be riding with Zappi, the Zappi team. Flavio Zappi runs a team that James Knox was part of as well. He'll be riding for them next season, so it'll be interesting to see how he gets on. And Lionel did an interview with Flavio Zappi at the end of last year, which was very interesting. Was that the end of last year? I think it was. We're very grateful to iWalka for their support. And if you run a small business, you want to find out more about iWalka, go to iwalka.co.uk, iwoca.co.uk. Daniel.
Yes.
What are you looking at? I thought you were going to say something there.
No, I was actually looking at some of the stuff we ate last night, Rich. We had another wonderful meal, didn't we, in the Ristorante Bacchus in Matera. We had some lovely orecchiette. We talked yesterday, didn't we, about the gastronomic similarity or relationship between that area of Basilicata and Puglia, where we are today. So lots of orecchiette. What else did we have? We had some lasagne.
Lots of nice antipasti.
Materane, lots of nice antipasti. We had some lovely Aglianico red wine.
That was all lovely.
It was.
We've got a lot of people to hear from in tonight's episode.
We did,
Daniel.
Rich.
We've got our diarist, James Knox, and Jacopo Guarnieri. We've got Matt White.
We have, Rich. And do you know what I'm curious about? Earlier we heard, I think it was Addy Engels or one of the Jumbo Visma guys, alluded to the fact that what really prevented the split from sticking today was the sprinters team not really doing all that much. And we talked about the rugby team, Groupama FDJ. A few people at the start today, they said to us, well, if there is a team who could split it, it is them, because they've got a lot of big powerhouses here. But they didn't do an awful lot, because I suppose, you know, they got no GC guy
here.
Didn't
have to, did they?
Yeah.
You know, if they'd spent all day riding hard on the front of that little group.
Well, I think that's the point. Yeah. Yeah, they wanted to conserve energy.
But at one point, interestingly, De Koenig Quickstep, you know, tried to force them or to make life a bit harder for them, because when a small echelon like that forms, and it was only 30 or so riders, they look after each other because they can all help by riding in the gutter that affords the most shelter. If there are riders sitting on and not working, then they just move into the other gutter and give them less room to shelter, less shelter is what I'm trying to say. And so they did that at one point today to try and force Groupama FDJ and Cofidis, I think, up to the front. Not sure that it really worked, but yeah, I mean, if all those riders in that group had committed, then it would have probably stayed away and we'd have seen big gaps in it. We'd have seen the likes of Fuglsang out of the GC. But they didn't have to.
Well,
it wasn't really in their interest to do that.
Shall we hear from one of the rugby team?
Shall we hear from
FDJ?
Two of the rugby
Let's
team.
Hear from two of them. What would Jacopo Guarnieri be? Would he be a number eight? Or what kind of stature, isn't he? He's a big fella.
Yeah.
Whereas Miles Scottson, I see more as a flanker.
Hooker, maybe. Yeah, Miles Scottson, yeah.
Hooker would be DeMar.
Didn't know you knew your rugby, Daniel.
Oh, yeah, I used to be a flanker.
Did you?
Until everyone else grew and I didn't. Anyway.
Well, Miles Scottson is the Aussie on that team. I spoke to him at the start. Shall we hear from him first and then from our diarist, Jacopo Guarnieri?
Must be great to be part of this team at the moment.
Yeah, can't really ask for a better start. We pretty much, a goal is to win a stage more if we can. Now we already have two.
How does an Aussie end up on a French team?
Well, I was BMC before, and then I was just looking for a new team. I wanted a change, and when I spoke to Groupama, seemed like actually they were going to fit. Probably was not something I thought a few years ago, but yeah, it's actually a really, really, really good team, and I'm happy here.
And how's Arno to work for? I mean, he's obviously in terrific form. What's he like as a team leader?
Yeah, really good, and actually I think he's this year become more of a leader, because it was the first time, like, between races, he was really keeping me motivated, checking out how training's going, especially before the Giro. So that's nice, because you go home after winning some races and he's immediately checking how things are. So it's really kept me motivated, and he's a really easy guy to work for. He's like very modest and quite a nice guy.
How's your French?
Always improving, but not very good.
And today, another big chance for you today.
Yeah, today is like perfect for us. It will be windy, but if everything goes well, normally that should suit us.
So here we are again, again on a winning side. That felt pretty good. I'm getting used to this. We'll be really set when we're gonna lose these things, and it will happen, of course. But jokes aside, it feels good to be such on a high with the whole team. We got three victories in basically three different stages, even though like it could be looking the same from the TV, but well, they were completely different stages. And today was really hard, even though it was super short, but with the wind, everybody knew it, and everybody was ready, and immediately when there was the opportunity, a quick step with the hammer down, and we were all there,
We didn't want to do any echelon today because, yeah, we wanted to save as much as we can for the final kilometers. But yeah, we had to follow, and we were there in number. Also, we were five guys in the front with the group of 30, and so we were pretty happy with that. But then, obviously, when we started to turn, it was more tailwind, and then it was a kind of headwind. So, but we always stayed in good position. It was a really nervous stage because then, of course, when the groups behind came back, well, they don't want to leave the first position as well. And yeah, there was a lot of problem. We had also problems too with Scottson having a crash, but that was because of a moment of lack of attention from him. Fortunately, he was not injured or anything, because on the TV it looks pretty bad. But he stand up immediately. He came back and he did a superb lead out. And it was a hectic finale because we know the turns, but we were expecting a way larger roads. And even the last straight, it was headwind, so it was not easy to organize ourselves and to be up there. And I think Arnaud made an impressive sprint, because with the headwind and it was slightly uphill, it was, yeah, really slightly. But in a sprint, you can feel that too. It was impressive. And well, today we also started from Matera. And yesterday is my first time here, even though I'm Italian, but, you know, I saw many places in the world. And yesterday I was like so pimped, and I was telling everybody in the team, oh, look, guys, today we're going to arrive in such a beautiful place. But actually yesterday the finish line, even though it was Matera, was like, I don't know from which side, but we saw nothing, you know. And they were like, yeah, come on, yeah, it was nothing special. But today, finally, the start, the neutral was in the city center, and was just amazing. Really happy. I was looking forward to see this city, and I was planning also to visit during the holiday this winter, since, yeah, traveling abroad is not maybe the best at the moment. And but well, I'm glad that the Giro is always like giving surprises with the starts and everything, because it's always, maybe it's hard for them and for us with the logistic, with the buses and everything, but yeah, we had the best view ever. It's the best race for the views. So I think everybody at home also with the cameras enjoy it. And they got a lot to watch also after with the echelons. But yeah, we won it. That's great. And tomorrow, who knows? Maybe we'll be there again. We'll see. Ciao.
So there we go. Rich, Jacopo was also very impressed with Matera this morning. I had a chat with Mauro Vegni, the Giro director, this morning, and he was licking his lips. He was
purring like a cat.
He was. He was very happy that everyone else was so happy. One thing he wasn't too enthusiastic about was, not from me, I should stress, but he keeps getting a lot of questions about the Alps and the Colle dell'Agnello, and he's been saying in a few interviews that this is in danger of becoming a self-fulfilling prophecy, that the more people ask about it, the more attention this issue of whether the big Alpine climbs are going to be passable or not is going to get, and who knows, the authorities could step in and stop the race. The other issue, of course, that is very much on Venier's mind at the moment is the uptick in COVID cases in Italy, and he admitted this morning that that's a big worry. But the Giro is rolling on, and you know, it's very difficult when you're in, well, it's not such an airtight bubble here as it was at the Tour de France, but you're in a bubble of sorts, certainly in terms of your consciousness and of the outside world, and yeah, you sort of take for granted that the race is just going to barrel on, don't you?
Yeah, and I was speaking to someone this morning who made the interesting point about the south of Italy compared to the north of Italy in terms of attitudes towards COVID. You know, it was really in the north of Italy that it hit hardest and had the most devastating impact, and in the south, perhaps not so much. And I've been quite surprised by the relaxed attitudes around here to wearing face masks and so on. The fashion here is to wear your face mask just below your nose, which isn't really how they're supposed to be worn. And I think, you know, as we get further north, it will become, well, there'll be a different atmosphere maybe because of that. Because I think the races that have been up there so far, there has been a different attitude towards that bubble and people's health and safety. Shall we hear from James Knox, one of our audio diarists here, who's just sent us in a, A really fascinating dispatch. He rides for Deceuninck Quick Step. He's a small climber, but at the Vuelta and here today, he's been very prominent in the front echelons, and that's partly because of the team that he rides for. And he describes here the sort of feeling in the bus and the pressure that was on them before the start today.
Well, very crazy day, done and dusted. Ticked off pretty quick. I think we did 51, 51.2 k an hour average there, and it was just a little mini Vuelta crosswind stage like last year. Yeah, these days are completely crazy. It feels like, I think it's the closest I'll feel to going to war before the start on the bus, bricking it basically, really nervous but excited. The music pumping sort of thing. And then, yeah, just shitting it to be in front from the start. The early breakaway went and we sort of stayed right there in front. And then it just turned into this big drag race when we came out into the exposed section with Elio. Me actually touching his wheel. I don't know how much of this was on TV. And yeah, we just ripped it apart, basically. We had a good crosstail for the first 50, 60 kilometers, I think. Only 30, 35 of us in front. 7 out of 8 quick step. Nearly all of Jumbo, nearly all of Sunweb. But missing was Astana, missing was Ineos, missing was Micah. So behind, they had a strong chase. They brought us back. We came to a sort of bigger group, which, you know, took the impetus away from the guys in front because we were going full gas. But yeah, it's hard to sustain that when there's 60, 70, 80 guys in the wheels. And also the wind changed a bit, you know. It's a big, big difference going from that crosstail wind where you don't get any shelter to crosswind, crosshead, really. For a lot of it, I just become a horrible, horrible little runt, screaming and shouting. Basically, just 3 hours of losing my temper at people and just shouting for the sake of it. Stayed out of trouble. There was plenty of trouble, some crashes. Those awful, awful barriers, last 45, every 5 kilometers on that big main road to Brindisi. What are they all about? That's taking 1.5 to 2 meters from either side of the road, making a huge, huge pinch. And I was very close to that big crash. Hope everyone who crashed there is okay, but so stupid. No excuse, really, I think. But yeah, obviously big, big buzz in the bus afterwards. We were all, you know, up for this days and got a bit of a reputation being quick step. So I feel like living up to that is quite a buzz, and we've been chatting about it, talking about today's events and everything that went along with it. Yeah, they didn't get quite finished off, but I think, you know, Damar looked really, really impressive again, and Ballerini did a great job, and I think Alvaro just got boxed off his wheel, and it looked like, yeah, he just got stuck behind when Damar launched, which was a bit of a shame. But yeah, I mean, what to say, you know, could go on and on about how crazy these days are, but it's very, very hard to get across the stress, the fighting, the battle that it is, really. It's just, you know, it's not legs, it's just everything. Fighting with your elbows, pushing your wheel into gaps that aren't there, just to keep fighting, and you know, every position matters in the crosswind. If you start going backwards, you get put in the gutter, then it's very, very hard to move up again. So pleased to be able to show myself in that front echelon and rip through for a bit. Felt like I also did a job staying with the boys well, which is not always easy. Not easy is also for Joao. A lot of people bouncing off him, pushing him off the wheels when he's trying to sit in the train, but already heard from a couple of people who saw me flapping around in the wind trying to bring him up at 6-7k to go or something. Yeah, I heard I was even getting poked fun at by Eurosport commentary. I'm not sure what that's about, but yeah, just making a bit of a last minute effort just to get him up there in the front so he's in position, and then that was my job done. Stay behind him, stay out of trouble, and got through unscathed.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much to Science and Sport for supporting the Cycling Podcast. You can get 25% off all your Science Support products, your gels, your drinks, your bars, at scienceandsport.com with the code Daniel. This is deliberate.
No, it's TCP 25.
How can you hold 4 different languages in your head?
Five.
English, German, French, Italian, Spanish. Yeah, okay. How can you hold 5 different languages in your head and not remember a simple discount code.
Because I don't pay attention. Which
is,
it's
okay.
Very simple.
Right. So SISCP25. SISCP25.
Can I ask you a question now?
Mm-hmm.
We're in Puglia. We established that earlier. Name a Pugliese rider of the last of recent Giro history.
Ooh.
This is irrelevant. You'll see why this is irrelevant.
Ooh.
In a minute.
I should know this because I think we were talking about this the other day, but I can't remember it, now.
You should. There should be a bit of a memory jog, a bit of a prompt. If you just look to your right and you look at the structure.
Oh, there he is.
Where you're staying tonight. It's a very particular shape of
conical
building, which is
conical
synonymous
roof.
With this region of Italy. They've become the symbol, really, of this region of Italy. As this region has become more and more gentrified, there are a lot of hotels, boutique hotels, that are being created in these buildings.
Diego Conical.
No, Richard.
Dario.
So these are the Trulli.
Sorry.
And there was a rider from Puglia, Leonardo Piepoli, whose nickname was the Trullo Volante, the Flying Trullo.
Until he was sort of
disgraced.
Yeah, bang to rights. There haven't been many riders from this region.
No, very unusual to get riders from this part of the world.
Well, listen, we heard before the break there from James Knox of the Koenig Quick Step. Really fascinating insight again from him. If you want to hear more from the audio diarist, the latest episode of Kilometre Zero, powered by Zwift, was released this morning. We've got working on a couple of other Kilometre Zeros, but the diarist will feature in those and also in the regular episodes. So yeah, really fascinating insight from James Knox. Another writer who didn't have such a good day today. And you know, the sense of dread that some of the writers would have felt before today and the sheer unpleasantness of fighting in crosswinds. Joe Dombrowski has also sent in a diary. We'll hear from that. We'll hear that in an episode of Kilometre Zero. He was caught up in the crash actually as well, 45 kilometers ago, but he's okay. But the you know, I think in James Knox we heard a sense of relish, you know, for the day. In a lot of other riders it was the opposite, and one of them was Harm van Hook, the young Belgian rider who's riding extremely well and wears the white jersey as best young rider, though Joao Almeida is actually first as best young rider, but he's obviously in the pink jersey of race leader. Van Hook is 23. He had a crash today. He had a tough day. He didn't really enjoy it. A lot of help from his team, particularly Thomas De Gendt, who'd been in that early break and then dropped all the way back to help him. And I think he was a big help in bringing it all back together. I spoke to Harm van Hook at the finish.
Yeah, quite a tough day out there for you today, I guess.
Yeah, I was really scared of this stage with the crosswinds. Not the best to ride in the crosswinds. But yeah, I have to thank the team. They did an incredible job. They waited for me. They pulled, they bring me back. Also after the crash, they wait, they brought me back. There was like not really much stress in the team. They did all a good job, and I'm really happy to be at the finish of the stage, because I had not the best feeling in this stage.
You must have had a moment of panic where you maybe saw, because you're obviously very highly placed overall, you're wearing one of the jerseys. There must have been a moment when you thought that was maybe slipping away from you.
Yeah, for sure. And when I was in the third group, there was a moment I thought we never come back. I was pulling myself also, but then the whole team came back from the first group or the second group. They all did an incredible job to bring me back, so I really have to thank them.
And otherwise, you must be delighted with how you've been riding. I mean, we saw on Etna especially, one of the strongest in the mountains in the race. You'll be looking forward to reaching the mountains again.
Yeah, for sure. I like it more to be to have a stage with four high top mountains than the crosswinds the whole day. So I'm really looking forward to the mountains, and maybe I can do a kind of top result like on the Etna.
Well, I spoke to you at the Vuelta last year, your first Grand Tour. You seem to have made a big improvement since then. Do you feel like you've made a big improvement?
Yeah, for sure. In the Vuelta, I had not such a good shape, but it brought me to a higher level. Then after the Vuelta, I rest for a bit. Then I kept training really good. I kept training full, long hours, high intensity. And now I'm back where I was with in the 23. I'm really happy to be back in the top top group of the World Tour.
That was Van Hook, 23 years old from Kortrijk, but very much a climber. You know, I mentioned him before. He was best friends with Bjørg Lambrecht, the rider from Lotto Soudal, who very sadly died at the Tour of Poland last year. And he's really, you know, he was very raw at the Vuelta last year. It was all very new to him, but he really is growing, obviously, in confidence at this Giro and riding very well. You spoke as well, Daniel, at the start and the finish to Matt White of Michelin Scott.
I did, Rich. Today, well, it didn't turn out to be a very comfortable day for Simon Yates either. He was off the back at one point. He went from the second group to the third group and then finally got back on. Thanks in no small part, as you said earlier, to his teammate Affini, who subsequently crashed. And, well, we'll hear from Matt White about what he knew about Affini and his prospects of continuing after the finish.
Matt, we're almost a week into the Giro. Simon has had a couple of setbacks. Well, he had one setback and then he was just sort of yo-yoing a little bit a couple of days ago. How is he now?
Oh, look, I think it's going in the right direction. It's going in the right direction. And yeah, there's no easy day on these races. And today's going to be no different. We've got crosswinds today. But I suppose we're going to get a good indication of where he's at on Sunday.
A lot of people are saying that the last week of this race is going to be, well, it's going to be crazy because there are a lot of teams that have come here with pretty inexperienced teams. Do you foresee that it's going to be pretty wild? And there could be scenarios we haven't seen in Grand Tours for a long time, breaks that are very dangerous from a very long way out.
Yeah, it will be interesting because I think with this field here, I think a lot of teams went pretty heavy on their Tour de France rosters. And I think there's obviously some very, very classy bike riders here, but I think there's not the depth of climbers you would normally see here in that, you know, after the top 10 or 15 guys. So it's going to be quite hard to control. I don't think there's one team here that is strong enough to dominate the last week, which opens up the race for an aggressive style of racing.
And just thinking about that last week, Matt, people might look at the way Simon was in Tirreno, and then the fact that he did struggle a little bit the other day. And the obvious thing to say, the obvious sort of theory would be he was too strong too soon. He was in form at Tirreno and now he's sort of on the descending slope. Is that completely wrong from your point of view?
Yeah, it is. It is. I think the reason Simon stayed away from the Worlds was that we were happy with his preparation running into Tirreno. We didn't need any more racing to bring him up. And so we had that period after Tirreno for a really controlled build-up to the start of the race. And that's the reason why he did avoid competition. So, no, I don't agree with that at all. I think his preparation's been good. And I think if he can get back to 100% healthy, 100% where he was not that long ago, I think there's some damage that can be done in the last race, in the last week of this race.
We remember how strong Lewis Hamilton was last year. And he was earmarked on the basis of last year's Giro as a future, you know, star maybe of Grand Tours. How's he doing and how are you going to use him?
Good. He's in a good place. Depending on what eventuates over the next few days, I think we're going to have Lucas, based off last year, based off the numbers we've seen so far, I think he's going to be around to help Simon. And that could play very handy. I think not too many leaders in this race have a guy nearly as strong as them, and I think we're going to see that with Lucas in the last week, and then Jack Hague's also in a great place as well. So we've got a couple of good, really good support climbers for Simon, but I wouldn't be surprised to see Lucas finish in a quite high place up here by the time we arrive in Milan.
Matt, we spoke this morning and you and other people were not sure whether it would split or not. It certainly did at one point. And Simon was in the second group, the third group. But was that to do with the crash or was that legs?
Yeah, still to be worked out. We had a couple of guys involved in a crash, which then did split the group. So I haven't spoken to the guys as of yet there. But at the end, they had one or two guys there to get him back. And then once we're back in that front group there, it was all under control after that.
And you mentioned the couple of crashes you've had. I guess you don't know too much at the moment because the guys are still in the bus. But what can you tell us?
Yeah, it looks like we definitely got one guy out of the race. It looks like a Feeney will be out of the race with a broken bone in his hand. And we've got one of the other guys is off to get another X-ray now. So we could be losing two riders, which will be a bit of a blow for us. But we can't change that anyway.
And you can't really talk about relief when you've got two riders injured, but a little bit, you must be a little bit relieved anyway that it did come back together.
Yeah, definitely. Lucas Hamilton was also involved in a crash early. He was in the last group on the road. That could have been any kind of general classification battle done for him. Fortunately, that came back when it propped, and that first big crash happened. Well, there were so many crashes, I can't remember where they were in the stage today. But he ended up coming back and finishing the front group. So, look, you win some, you lose some. It looks like we could have lost a couple of riders due to injuries today, but at the end, our two most important climbers are where they need to be on bunch time.
So, Rich, tomorrow, another potential stage win for Arnaud Démare. It's a little bit hillier than today. We're staying in Puglia, but we're going to a different part of Puglia, the Gargano Peninsula, which is, it's quite flat in Puglia. It's one of the flatter parts of Italy, actually. But the Gargano is a little bit hillier, more sort of wooded, more wild, I would say. Very beautiful part of Italy. And there are a couple of little kickers in the last 20 or 30 kilometres. There's one 17% ramp, not too far from the finish, which could sort a few people out or catch a few people out.
Is Sagan going to win? A lot of people willing Elia Viviani to win, I feel. You know, there's a lot of scratching of heads, really. He's not won yet in Cofidis colours. What are the reasons for that? He's not in De Koning Quickstep anymore. You know, the support that you get as a sprinter in that team makes a difference, certainly. Some people I've seen commenting on Michael Morkov, he clicked really well with Viviani and is a fantastic lead out man. Who knows? He was only 10th today, though, Viviani. He's quite a bit off the win at the moment. You know, tomorrow we saw today Michael Matthews and Ben Swift up there. We're hoping to have a word with Ben Swift tomorrow. But on a finish like that, perhaps Matthews has gone close a few times now, and that's really the first time Swift has had a go for himself and is clearly in pretty good form. He had a crash a few days ago and suffered a bit after that, but he seems to be better.
Rich, just a final piece of, well, not really corrections, final bit of housekeeping, really. Another one of our very well-informed and loyal listeners has written in. A few days ago, when Filippo Ganna won his second stage of the Giro, he made the gesture, the famous Italian gesture, which I said doesn't really have a name. The reason I said that at the time was that the Eurosport, Italian Eurosport commentators, or was it the Rai commentators, they just described it as the gesture that we Italians always make. And this,
we Italians,
yes, this is what they said, and this confirmed to me, well, I'd been looking for this a few weeks ago, actually, when I don't know if how au fait you are, Rich, with emojis, but a few weeks or a few months ago a new emoji was launched, and it was precisely this gesture. And at the time, I wanted to use it in a text message or something, and I was trying to use predictive text, and I was racking my brains for what would generate that emoji because it wasn't appearing on my phone, and I couldn't think of it. So I sort of had in my head that it didn't really have a name. However, I have been corrected on this by John Laybourne, and he's absolutely right. There are lots of names for this gesture. Everyone knows the gesture I mean. But in Italian, it's variously referred to as the pine cone hand, the artichoke hand, tulip hand, caliper hand, bag hand, or probably most famously or most commonly, la mano a cuopo. The cuopo being like a paper cone that you put fried fish in Napoli.
Wow.
But
yeah, I can see that.
Quite an interesting story about how this emoji came about. Apparently there was an Italian, Italo-American entrepreneur called Adriano Farano, who recently, not too long ago, was talking to one of his colleagues in San Francisco, Jennifer Lee, and she was telling him that she'd started making limoncello being the lemon Digestif from, well, the Napoli area, Amalfi area, typically. And she was talking about how she made it, and she said she made it with vodka, and he was aghast at this. Unusual for Italians to be disgusted, yeah, and about how their food and drink.
Contraventions of, yeah, food and drink rules.
Yes, but he was, and because limoncello is not made with vodka. And he made the mano a cuoppo, the artichoke hand, the pine cone hand gesture. And Jennifer Lee...
It's on the wrist, isn't it? It's, yes, in the wrist.
Jennifer Lee supposedly... works for one of these big, I don't know, emoji generator companies. Is that a thing?
Know.
Emoji Nation, and she's the brains. She was the brains behind the artichoke pine cone bag caliper hand emoji. But I still can't find it on my phone.
I'm gonna have to listen back to this, I think.
So just to give the names in Italian. It's la mano a pigna, la mano a carciofo, la mano a tulipano, la mano a pinza, la mano a borsa, or la mano a cuoppo.
Well, there we go. Lionel, Daniel, as we're speaking, an email drops into my inbox from the Cycling Podcast. Lionel's written a few words to subscribers to the newsletter. If you'd like to subscribe to the newsletter, sign up at thecyclingpodcast.com. I can see that Lionel's really pining to be here. But
do you think he's doing pine cone hand?
The newsletter also has details of how to win a Cycling Podcast jersey. These jerseys that we had made this year, designed by Katusha, made by Katusha. One jersey is up for grabs to a lucky listener. All you have to do is predict the winner of Sunday's stage. He says, predict the winner of the stage correctly. Well, that goes without saying, doesn't it? Predict the winner of the stage, and somebody will be pulled out of Lionel's hat to win one of these beautiful jerseys. If you'd like to just buy one, go to thecyclingpodcast.com. And if you'd like to sign up for one of the Zwift rides as well, they'll continue through the Grandest Tour with a ride every Sunday at 9:30 a.m. UK time. Sunday's ride is nearly full. Next week's ride will be on Thursday at 7:45 p.m. UK time. Sign up at thecyclingpodcast.com to the newsletter. And just before we go, some thanks to friends of the podcast. For me, a big thank you to Paul Mantell, Mr. TJ Birtwistle, Keith Robertson, Barry Burnley, Noel Harrington, Philip Andrew, Robert Dixon, and Adam Ball.
And thanks from me to Paul Franson, John Reppy, Robert J. McCall, Rob Llewellyn, Philip O'Neill, Matthias Brendley. The Matthias Brandley?
Who writes for Israel Startup Nation.
And Mr. Alexander Whitmore.
Well, we'll have to ask him because he's riding this race. We'll have to ask him, won't we? Who knows? Any other business?
Well, Rich, tonight we are going... Well, I'm slightly... I don't know whether we've made the right decision here about where we're going to eat tonight. We're going to a braceria, which is sort of a steakhouse, really. And in Puglia, I feel like we should be sticking with the orecchiette, my favourite kind of pasta, as I think we established last night. But no, we're going to be eating a lot of meat tonight, which I'm not a big meat eater at all, but that's what we're going
well,
for.
Well, neither am I. But are we... I was a vegetarian for a bit. I had to stop that when I moved to France. Are we still in Puglia tomorrow night?
Yes, we're staying in a place called Lesina tomorrow night.
Well, right, we can always
north.
Have it.
That's true, actually, yeah. Right in the north. I think the cuisine starts to change slightly as we head into towards Molise. But yeah, we're going to be having meat tonight and no doubt some red wine. Maybe a Primitivo or a Negro Amaro or maybe an Aglianico like last night.
Oh, I can't wait. Let's go, Daniel.